The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
I thought, because I mean, this has been a year in the making, Holly.
Yeah.
I thought maybe Casey and Leland were mad at us.
Yeah, I know. Like maybe, or maybe they just don't like Canadians.
Oh, gosh.
They're like, oh. No, no, no. Mm.
Okay, so let me explain. We got Casey Moore and Leland Mooring from Leland. So here's what happened. I don't know if it, so, Casey, I was trying to figure out the timeline of when you had started Leland because with Leland, because Leland, in 2010, you were in Edmonton for an event called YC.
Yes.
And it was really hot in the gym, and you're like, let's go outside. And where Holly and I proceeded to have an interview with you and your brother, but they kept mowing the lawn. They had, it was just really loud and stuff. And at some point you just said, I'm done with this. And so our meeting, it was like 5 minutes because you're like, we can't get this. We'll do this again in like half hour. And it never happened. So I thought, and I said to Holly, I think Leland and them are mad at us.
Yeah.
And it's been 14 years for this to finally come to fruition.
That is amazing. I don't even, you know what's so incredible is that this is going to sound so terrible. I literally do not remember that. I have no, you think I would remember that. I have no memory of
can
that.
Can I confess?
Yes.
I also have no memory of that.
That was a long time ago. Wow.
I don't know. Is Johnny making this stuff up? Is he? I think he might.
He might be.
I've been harboring this for 14 years.
Did this really happen, Johnny?
It sounds like this happened.
I thought you made it up too, because I don't remember this.
No,
now that also makes me seem like a snob.
I literally don't remember this at all. I remember we've played at YC. I mean, I'll take your word for it, Johnny. If I really did that, I'm sorry.
I'm not mad.
Hey, well, you remember lots of details about it.
He does, right?
Hey, maybe this podcast episode is just about me and Johnny making up, and just yes. You know, that's what this is. Casey and Holly are just here to help mend this relationship,
actually,
to rebuild this bridge.
The first time we chatted was 2007 after Sound of Melodies.
What?
Okay,
how do you remember this stuff? I think this should be an intervention.
Remember all what happened that day?
I don't.
It was a really great interview. It was actually still one of the things I'm like, oh, you know what? We talked to Mitch Wong a little while ago. He's like, you guys are amazing. Talk to Leland, talk to Kate. They're incredible guys. I'm like, yeah, I kind of remember that from 2007.
That's amazing.
You know, it was probably this is not justifying any of it. What probably was happening is you probably caught us on the very end of one of those extremely long runs. 100%. Where we're missing our wives and missing our families. And then it was one of those colossal like failures in terms of that. It doesn't make sense though to me that I would just leave an interview just because it was loud.
No, you had said we would reconvene and we never reconvened.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, well, I'm sorry that happened.
No, no,
dude.
It's not.
We're reconvening now.
It's yes. not you. It's me.
Some things are.
It is.
It's not me. It's you.
Regardless, bridge under the water under the bridge. Bridge under the water.
Bridge under the
Tim
water.
Tim Hortons
dude.
Didn't have powdered donuts that day. Tim Hortons was out of donuts.
Yes, probably.
Yeah. So funny.
We were rushing out of there. We had to get to Timmy Hortons, bro, and get our donuts in before
there
you
we go.
Left on the
See,
on the flight.
Priorities.
All right. So we like to ask this guilt testing question because we never know where it's gonna go. Casey, we'll start with you, my friend. Who are you and where did you come from?
Nobody and Memphis.
Memphis. Nobody.
Good barbecue.
I play guitar in the band and sing, and I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
I'm always fascinated by the answers. This one, I think, was the shortest one thus far out of 300 and some odd interviews.
Oh, that's amazing.
Leland, same question?
Oh, same question for me. Okay, sure. Cool. I didn't want to speak ahead. My name is Leland. I'm the guy who named the band after myself, and I am from Baytown, Texas, which is where like we make all of your toothpaste and we make all of your gas, everything else, or at least not yours. You guys are in Canada, so I don't know that we ship it out there, but we make the U.S. is okay. Good.
We give you the raw or whatever.
There you go.
And
that's
then you
right.
guys
the
refine
material.
It, and then we buy it.
Raw nutrients?
That's right.
I don't know.
You buy it back.
We buy it back at a really high price. So we kind of lose because it was ours to start with. So that's how we
do. That's very true. That's very true. All of my friends who are like Star Wars fans say that Baytown, where we're from, looks like Coruscant. If you're a Star Wars nerd, it looks like the city that sits up in the clouds, except all those clouds are cancerous chemicals. Yeah.
With all the transitions that you guys went through, and I mean, Leland, you named the band after yourself. Casey then joins. Like back in the 90s, there was Casey and JoJo. Did you guys ever think of doing like a Casey and Leland?
No, I don't know. We're not clever enough. We didn't think of that. Actually, somebody the other day said we should have changed the band from Leland to Moreland because Moreland. We both have more in our last name. Yeah. Mooring and more.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Moreland sounds like some kind of like fictional land in a Dungeons and Dragons game. Like,
it does. Or Tomorrowland.
Yeah. My character was traveling to the land of Moreland.
Yeah. It sounds, or like some old law firm from the UK.
A law firm from the UK.
From like 1700s.
Moreland and Sons.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more Moreland.
I love this. Okay, so we're gonna.
So who are you guys, and where are you from?
No one's We've asked never been that asked before. This.
Yeah, where are you guys from? Edmonton.
Yeah, and GTA. I'm in GTA. Ontario land.
Nice,
Toronto.
Yeah, the Toronto area.
Toronto. I love the way you guys say Toronto. It's like one word. Toronto.
It is. It is. There's no Toronto.
You don't say Toronto. Get out of here with that junk.
Yeah. Like, why would you want to?
It's
in
like
your
Calgary
city?
Or Edmonton.
Yeah. Calgary. Yeah.
Edmonton.
Dude, Edmonton had one of the, we had one of the greatest like Indian food experiences of our life because we love Indian food. We eat it everywhere. We found a couple of good spots in Nashville. And then there's like, obviously the UK is really good at Indian food. Mm-hmm. There's like a really good spot in London we went to, but in Edmonton, we still talk about it. What was the name of that place? Do you remember that, Casey? It's really small. And it was like a dad, a mother and father and their two kids. I don't even know if it's still there anymore, but this is like 2008. Actually, you know what? That's probably what happened. We probably left the interview because we were trying to go get to that.
There you go.
That's what it was. Yeah.
This makes way more sense.
It does. Okay. Wait. Sorry. Challenge accepted. Come to the GTA. We have Indian food. A lot of it. A lot. So stay a month so we can test them all.
With you guys doing this for so long, where have you seen the progression of worship music? Where have you seen all that kind of change? Because Holly and I constantly have conversations with people, and it's like, it used to be the church and radio was not a thing. Now you hear a lot of church worship music on radio. Do you see that that's going to be a continuation of, or do you see there being a change again over the next, say, 5-10 years?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, that's something I think that we're, you know, because we're swimming in those waters, we're talking about it all the time. And a lot of our friends are, you know, they're either a part of movements or they are songwriters or engineers or producers or musicians who are playing on everything. So it's kind of like, at least in Nashville, not in like a gossipy way, but just in terms of like, you know, from like a leadership perspective and genuine concern for the health of worship. That's definitely always in front of everybody's view and is always part of the conversation. I think there's lots, I've been thinking a lot about this. It feels like there's a lot of things happening at one time, and it's tough to just point it all at one cause. I think one of the challenges is that worship is now a genre of music, and that didn't exist for a long time. Worship was just what Christians did as a response to the love of God. Worship was not a genre for a long time. It wasn't a song. Worship was, you know, for using an old Christian trope, worship was actually your lifestyle. It was your life lived before God. It was something that you did not just on Sunday morning, but it was something that you did with your family. It was a dedication of your life to God. And then it became a genre of music, and for all sorts of reasons, not any of them necessarily being inherently wrong, but it, you know, we had to compartmentalize it some way. The Christian music industry felt it needed to. And then it was, I think we're also living in a strange time in that it's the music listener has completely changed. And I'm going to throw myself into that bucket of people too, because, you know, I'm using a smartphone right now that literally didn't exist in 2006. Mm-hmm. And so when I think when social media came into the picture, and well, the smartphone, and then followed quickly by social media and the, you know, the integration of all those platforms together, it's completely changed everyone. It's changed the way that we think. It's changed the way that we talk. It's changed the way that we do business. But of course, it also has changed the way that we listen to music and consume music. So I think we're kind of not only is the church, but I think Christian music as an industry is also trying to figure out what to do right now. Like no one's got it figured out. I think the one encouraging thing that has kind of remained the same to me is that you can't fake intentionality, and you can't fake motive and heart. So like if somebody is still writing a song that they really believe in, whether that's an artist or that's a church or movement, it doesn't matter honestly what it's packaged in or what it comes in. If the song is moving and the person that wrote it really still believes in it, and it's moving that person, it comes from a really deep place, it's genuine, it's not put on, then the listener is going to listen through that. They're going to be able to hear, and they're going to be able to be moved by that song in the same way that the person that wrote it was moved. And I think that still hasn't changed. That'll never change. I think the challenge, though, I think that honestly still is the thing that needs to be protected, the challenge, because your church or movements might have the talent and ability to make music, and all these systems kind of exist to put things out, it doesn't necessarily follow that you just should, you know, because you can. And so I think that's the big one too, is kind of going like, you know, when we first moved to town, like in, you know, in 2006, when we signed to a Christian record label, because of all of these barriers that existed, even in 2006, to getting your music out for people to hear it, there were all of these natural barriers that, even though they could be seen to the independent artist as bad challenges, the positive of them is that it allowed the artist, you know, to get what we call developed. Like there was a development process that would take place in the young artist. Let's say you were 19 years old and you got, you know, you're in Nashville in 2006. There's no way to really get your music out to everyone. You have to do sort of this hard process of long and slow development, where you meet people, you grow as a writer, as an artist. Maybe you write a lot. You're starting to develop your sound. Maybe you're playing at coffee shops and playing at churches or wherever. And then eventually along that way, you might meet someone a year or two later that's connected in the music industry. And this could be, you're an independent artist or a band, doesn't matter. It was kind of that same pathway. So it was never overnight, right? And so I think the challenge, so it protected you in a way to really grow and develop and spend 7, 8, 9 years developing who you are as a person, your walk with Jesus, the kind of music you want to make, your identity as an artist, what you believe in, what you feel called to carry. All those things were kind of getting worked out in this development phase. Whereas now, because everything is so easily accessible, and there's lots of positives about that, the challenge now is that you have to self-develop. You have to sort of like, you have to have leaders in place in your church movement. Let's just go back to movements and churches. You have to have leaders in place that can see the movement as, hey, are we fully developed yet? Or are we like still very young and still trying to discover things about who we are as a church or as a movement or as a culture. It doesn't mean that you don't do anything. It just, maybe it does mean that you just wait for a while and you develop things. Right. So I think that like, that's a big challenge. I think, you know, there's 100,000 new songs put out every single day on when you combine all the streaming platforms together. Really? A friend of mine told me the statistic the other day. It's insane.
Yeah, it's
when you put all the platforms together every single day, all and you include all genres of music, there's 100,000 new recorded songs and put onto Spotify and iTunes every single day. So
yeah.
In some sense, like mathematically, the likelihood of your movement or your song blowing up and exploding, it's statistically very, very low now because of the amount of music that comes out. Yeah, and so in some sense, that's actually kind of a good thing. Because to me, it, as a Christian, it points at the motive again of why you're doing what you're doing. Are you doing it for platform and influence? Or are we really doing it as worship unto God and, you know, or for our church to have songs to sing to the Lord? Mm-hmm. I'm all for more music. I mean, God, there can never be enough music made for the glory of God. That's going to continue for all eternity. For endless ages, we're going to keep making things for God's glory. I think God just cares much more about the intention of the heart and who we're becoming while we're making these things more than anything else. So,
I love that you say that. I'm going to just jump right on in here because you talk about like the intentionality and the heart and a lot of people talking now about AI, which reminds me, because I'm old, of when Napster was there and suddenly the music industry was like, oh, what's with this digital music stuff? What do we do with it? Let's tariff it to death. Now we have AI, and I think that'll be the one thing that will continue to resonate. AI doesn't have the connection with God. It can't write the songs that meet people where they're at. I think it's a great tool. I don't know. Yeah. What are your thoughts on AI and worship music and creation of music? Where are you guys as a band at with that?
Well, I mean, we have friends who, like one of my buddies, Matt Marr, is an artist here in town. He's
Canadian.
He's Canadian.
Newfoundland.
He's from Newfoundland. Newfoundland.
That's
also one of those single syllable towns. He's amazing. He's super involved in sort of the defense of human artistry in light of this new technology of AI, you know, sweeping across every industry. I think, I think you're right. I think, because at the end of the day, the reason art moves people, whether that's, and I would still even classify worship music under the larger heading of art, even though it is uniquely different than artistry, which to me is kind of a different thing. But I think the reason humans connect to it is because of suffering and pain. And we go through suffering, we go through pain. The world is filled with it. And, you know, we know that everything good, true, and beautiful comes from God's heart, comes from his nature and who he is. And one of those things is our good stories. And to me, good art tells a story, whether that's a movie or that's a song in a different genre, or that is, or that's a, you know, a visual piece of art. It tells some kind of story to you. And I think the reason that humans will always be attracted to that is because of the part of the story that everyone can relate to, which is pain. You know, everyone can relate to going through hard times, going through, moments where you ask those questions to God, why am I going through this? What's happening in my world? Is God even there? Does he care? And so I think good art will always speak to those things. That's why I think AI will have a tough time at ever really, you know, speaking that language. It has access to all of our data. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you can kind of try to mimic it and mock it a little bit. But it's never going to be able to replace, I think, humans in that space. Right now, at least, it's pretty not that great. I've read some ChatGPT poems. They're not too solid right now.
Yeah, my resume is looking terrible also.
let me ask this, though, because, okay, so Leland, you had said good art tells a story. Casey, I look at You're Not Done, and you guys have the song, and then you kind of, you like do a retract of the song. You're on tour doing stuff with Cody and Carrie, and you're like, wait, you know who needs to be on this song is Carrie. Good art tells a story, but then how does that work when it comes to different voices and the ways, like a remix of a remix of a song? Like, you guys had a great song and then you decided to do something a little different to it. Does it take away from the song or does it add to it?
You know, from a pure heart, it would just add to it. It was easy just being out with Carrie and Cody to instantly think, oh, Carrie would be so sweet on this. And, you know, just the evidence of her life lived out for Jesus. It is so evident. It's so inspiring. And even when we asked Charity to sing on our record version, you know, same thing, just Charity's life, what her legacy that she's already made. She's an amazing person and loves God with her whole heart. So it was actually fun to have Charity on one version and then Carrie on another. I think it just adds to the goodness. And we were pumped to have them on.
Yeah. I think that voices are kind of like fingerprints, you know, and your voice is unique to you. And inside your voice, this is getting a little heady, but I think your voice carries your soul and your history with God. It carries the walk you've had with God. The voice is really important because I think, you know, obviously God, we're made in his image. He created the whole world using his voice. And that the first part of the human body to develop is actually the ear, which hears the sound of God's voice. So that's really incredible to think about, is like, you know, we're made to hear God's voice, but then also God has given us one, to speak. And it's attached to your soul. It's attached. It's like the fingerprint of your soul to me. And so when Charity or when Carrie sing, they carry their history with God. And I think, you know, Casey's been developing a strong friendship with Carrie and Cody the past couple of years traveling on the road. It was just kind of a natural thing. We also knew that, like, I think early on, there was maybe one or two songs on the record that could have multiple expressions of them. And one of those songs was You're Not Done. Most of the record kind of felt like it sat in a kind of ensconced in one story from top to bottom. And it felt weird removing any of them out of that, except the song You're Not Done. That was kind of the only one that felt like, hey, we could pull this one out of that, the album City of God, and we could, it could be its own single. And I think mainly because the message it brings is much broader than it even is broader than the message of the record, which is centered around Psalm 46. But I think that there's always one song in there that has a broad impact to a lot of people. And I think that was just the one. So we didn't try to write one of the songs. We were like, man, if one of those naturally happens in this process, then we'll for sure try to give it new life of its own outside of the record. So
as a worship artist, though, and I mean, we talked to Matt Redman about this. We've talked to other worship artists. What is your reaction to when you go into a church and you hear one of your songs, but it's completely different or arranged differently or sounds different than what you originally had it?
I think that comes back to the difference between worship and artistry, which are, they're not one and the same. You know, we put those words together, worship artist, and that's, it makes sense because that's, we have an industry for it now and we have to have language around it. But to me, I kind of see them as two separate things. I see artistry is telling good stories. And that's for me, that's musical forms that fit really good storytelling. And then to me, worship leading or worship, being a worship leader, is much more of a pastoral calling and mode than it is necessarily an individualistic artist calling. Worship is much more like when writing a worship song is, it's not that it isn't creative or artistic. It's just much more like building a weapon for people to use.
Right.
So it's like, you know, you feel more like a blacksmith writing a worship song because you're fashioning something. Augustine said it this way. He said that singing takes theology from your head and writes it on the tablet of your heart. So the reason, so there is this utilitarian, it is intimacy, it is personal, but there is a utility, a really important spiritual utility in singing truth. Because when we sing, it sort of opens up our soul, and it kind of bypasses our intellect a little bit. There's a spiritual thing happening when you sing. So I think from a pastoral perspective, when we go to write these songs, and yeah, we might track it a certain way, make it a certain way. But if my heart is as a pastor, our pastoral heart of worship, then it's kind of more like, hey, I'm giving you a tool. You can use it with your community any way that you see fit to use it. Any way that God leads you, you might put a choir piece to it that wasn't on the record, or you might have a brass section that plays a whole part that makes more sense for your community, and we didn't put a brass section. It doesn't matter to me. But the artist perspective, that's much more individualistic, and it's not that people can't take things and make their own expressions. People do it all the time. It's honestly from the worship side, it's kind of like, well, no, duh. Yeah, you're supposed to take it and just make it your own and do your own thing with it. You know, what does Edmonton, Canada sound like when they sing this song? Awesome. Like, I want to hear what that sounds like.
I love that you said that it's a weapon that's being forged. We had a conversation with Lisa Bevere, and she said that worship and singing worship music for her was fighting. It was warfare.
Yeah.
And so that's a really beautiful way of making it. You guys are like soldiers, but with music, which is ironic because you think of like the Israelites, you know, they went around Jericho with trumpets. Like they used music as a way of having warfare in a very real, tangible way. So speaking of warfare, you guys are on the front lines, and let's talk about your lives a little bit, because you don't last this long in the industry if there hasn't been a series of ups and downs and, quite frankly, things coming against you. Let's start with you, Casey. Why me moment? Thinking of your life and your journey, some ups and downs. How did you navigate those?
Wow, that's an amazing question.
I know, we started from Timbits and we're going to this.
I know, goodness. No, it's so good. I mean, so many ups and downs. Even just my story, like a story, condensed version of my story, being born premature and having a ton of health complications and all that kind of stuff. The doctor saying that it's just not looking good for me to have like an amazing, healthy life, or even to be able to hear. There was all kinds of stuff going on. So, you know, and you hear those stories all the time of these, really a miracle happening, and you know, the doctor comes in the next day and it's like, I don't know what happened, but everything's fine. It was kind of one of those things.
Wow.
And just my family praying for me, and then as a young child into a young man falling in love with music, going to church and you know, discovering who God was, cultivating who I am in the Lord, with my gifting and apart from my gifting, centering my identity in Him, all the things. There's so many seasons, so it's really hard to wrap this up in one thing, but, I guess maybe where I am now and the biggest things that I've gone through, the hurdles that I've been through and that we've kind of all experienced, of just, it's all a journey, isn't it? Finding your identity in God and what He, maybe the giftings He's given you, the arena He's put you in. Mine specifically was music, and meeting Leland and traveling the world and writing songs and that kind of thing. And maybe for a little bit, I thought it was about me, and then shortly discovering, oh wait, it's actually nothing about me. And how can I use what God's given me in the highs and the lows? Maybe the most recent thing, if I can kind of sum it up, is probably going through the pandemic. That's probably the most recent thing that we can all kind of relate to. And a lot of our album, the City of God album, songs coming out of that, and some moments where me, both Leland and I, feeling, you know, pretty depressed, very anxious, all kinds of stuff that we, all these feelings that maybe we had never felt before. And, you know, we like to say leaning in as Christians, but more like falling in uncontrollably into this, like, well, I have a choice that I can either really cling to God here, and even though I'm terrified, I'm scared, I don't know what to do, I don't know what's next. You know, is this pandemic going to keep going forever? Well, how does this affect my life? Or it's like, okay, just like God has always been faithful throughout, you know, the centuries, thousands of years, millennia, through the church and the Bible, the Word of God, you know, surely He's going to come through for me. And so this is my choice to either run and flee or dive in, you know, full on to my faith. And if I say I believe in Him, what does that even mean? So we dove in, you know, to making the album. And that was not like, oh, this is a great opportunity to write songs. It was not like that at all. Yeah. It was more like Leland, because he was in Texas, 14 hours away from me, and I was at home in my studio. We're both kind of going through that. And, you know, songs were happening, but we weren't chasing songs or anything like that. We were honestly just clinging to God and hoping that He would come through for us. And He always does. But you know, those experiences kind of can lead you to Him and the depths of your own heart and seeing what's down there. And
yeah.
And how, so Leland was getting songs and these really intimate experiences with God, and same for me in my studio. I was getting these song ideas, and really it was not about making an album, but it was more just like God coming to us in those moments, I feel like, and wrapping His arms around us and loving us. And it was a way to get through that whole situation. And then eventually it turned into an album, which was really beautiful, and you just never know when that's going to happen.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Leland, sure. What about you?
I'm 35 now and have a few beautiful girls.
Yeah, girl dad.
Yeah, I'm a total girl dad, and I love it. It's the best thing ever.
How old are they?
They're 5 and 2, but they're about to be 6 and 3. Their birthdays are really close together. Our oldest name is Journey, and our youngest is Ivy. And it's the best thing being their dad. They've changed my life. But so 35, me and my wife have been married for 16 years. We just celebrated 16 years of marriage. We got married really young. We were babies when we got married, just kids. And I guess that's what you do in like Baytown, Texas. You just get married out of high school. you know, and so over the years, I mean, my goodness, me and there's all sorts of challenges with getting married that young. But there's also a lot of positives as well, just like everything else. I think, you know, me and my wife have literally done life together. So we've grown up together and matured as adults together. And so in that time, we've had our fair share of plenty of valleys and times where whether it's financial stress to emotional stress to all the stuff of life, just like going, God, you know, why the heck are we walking through this? I think, man, one of the latest thing that's kind of that, and to be honest, I'm still kind of walking through it. I haven't, you know, seen the other side of it. It's kind of been a journey towards freedom and less of like this overnight, you know, aha moment.
Yeah.
You know, I'm praying for that. But in the height of the pandemic, this probably would have been 2021, actually, sometime in there, early 2021. I've been on staff at that point for about a year and a half at a church that I helped plant and start. Our first service was like January 26th of 2020, which is crazy. And we've made it through the first rough part of the pandemic when everything was shut down. And then we were meeting back again on like Saturday nights at like this random building that would let us in. And, so I was doing that and then, not really traveling at all, but just kind of, you know, I was just getting inundated. I think that was kind of the culmination of all of the political intensity that was happening in our country, mm-hmm. plus the pandemic and its personal effects on my family. And I just was getting like super inundated with like everything. It was just lots of chaos, like in my mind. And there was a Sunday morning where I was headed to go lead worship, and I was by myself in my car and in my little Ford Focus driving this little goat cart in Houston traffic to church. And I was getting ready to pull into the parking lot where we were meeting. We were portable. We were like setting everything up. And it was early in the morning. I was pulling in, and literally just all of a sudden this nausea wave of like crazy nausea hit me out of nowhere. My whole body was like shaking. My hands were shaking. I couldn't really talk. I was having a hard time breathing. And I had to just kind of like pull out of the church parking lot and just kept driving because I didn't know what to do. So I eventually was able to like gather myself enough to call Mandy, my wife, and talk to her, use a couple of broken words to explain what was happening. And she was like, I think you're having like a panic attack or of sorts. And she was like, just, you know, park the car and let me pray. So she started praying for me, and she was like, just if you can, just say the name of Jesus. So I kept saying his name, and it lifted enough for me to kind of like, you know, gather myself a little bit. And she encouraged me. She's like, I think you can do this, baby. You can make it through and do church and then just come straight home. So I did church, and like God's grace carried me through the service enough. And then when it was done, I went back home and spent time with my wife trying to kind of unpack what happened. And then I just kind of realized just over the years, I think it was just a lot of things kind of coming to the head at once, you know? It's you know, part of it, I think, and I'm still kind of unpacking it. I think a lot of it, a good bit of it, at least on the initial side, was just having an entire 2 years of, you know, not only the natural things everyone was going through, like pandemic, but also making choices to just listen to every kind of voice, except the voice of Jesus, you know? I don't think that things like anxiety and depression are completely within your control. There's lots of things that happen to us that are completely out of our control. And we feel the effects of that and have to walk through that with God and depend upon him. But there are some things, I think, at least in my case, that were choices or decisions I was making throughout the course of a couple of years that had to bear their weight out over the course of a few years. And I think on my end, probably some of the things that I was doing and was unaware is I was just listening to every single voice, whether it was voices of politics to voices of culture to voices on social media. I was just inundating my mind with everything except the voice of Jesus and except, you know, spending intentional time with him. And I was getting lost in the swirl of anxiety and stress and fear. And then I think on top of that, I'm, you know, at 35, just beginning to realize throughout this journey how much of my identity still wasn't placed in Christ and was placed in what I thought people thought about me. It's amazing that, you know, you can be in your mid 30s and still feel like you're 16, you know, like still dealing with like all sorts of identity crisis stuff. And, you know, I don't think like things like social media have not helped that. I think they've just worsened it and inflated those problems that we already were going through. So yeah, I think like it's been a journey of trying to, of allowing God to love me and, my walk with Jesus or my times with Jesus have been a lot less filled with activity and a lot more just filled with like listening to him and just sitting with Jesus, just being with Jesus. Mm-hmm. So to me, it could look different every day, but these days it's looking like a lot of my car time.
Nice. Is
in my truck. Mm-hmm. Just sometimes there's music, sometimes there's not music. Usually the word of God is always involved on some level. And just me just being with him, trying to imagine in my imagination and in my heart, imagine Jesus sitting in my truck with me, the Holy Spirit being with me, and just listening to his voice, talking to him. There is a really cool, I'm at a phase now where I'm like, I'm hungry for and desperate for any kind of really positive spiritual practice that people are using that with Jesus or discovering in prayer that helps them know Christ more or feel more known by Christ. And one of those things that someone kind of like opened up my eyes to was the practice of using your imagination when you read any of the stories that involve Jesus, and taking time to meditate on that story and place yourself in different characters in the story. Hmm. So if you're, you know, reading the story of the woman at the well, you know, read the story enough to where you can imagine it, and then take time placing yourself at the well. You know, you're sitting at the well and Jesus is talking to you.
Yeah.
And then place yourself as, you know, one of the townspeople. You're watching this thing happen. You know, this person that's, you know, this, you're familiar with this person who's, you know, living a life filled with sin and all kinds of stuff. And you have your own judgments about this person, and you know who Jesus is, and you're wondering why he's replacing yourself in the shoes of the disciples. Why is he sitting there talking to this sinful person? You know, he's the Son of God. Why would he do that? You know?
Yeah.
And so placing yourself in all those parts of the story, for me, doing things like that have really, I don't know, it's made the gospel alive to me. It's made me understand how broken all of the disciples were.
Oh, yeah.
And how not perfect they were. Yeah, every person in Bible and scripture from the Old Testament to New, they're all mess ups and screw ups. And but it's the grace of God and the love of God weaving itself through the whole story, you know, of humanity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's probably one of the later things that I've been kind of dealing with. And you know, and also just being a dad, wanting to, my parents were never perfect, and they never pretended to be perfect. And I knew that as a kid that my parents weren't perfect. But the one thing that they did that I admired them a lot for is they always had in front of them like this very real, what looked like a pursuit of God's presence. Hmm. Whether that was, it was normal for me to see them with the Bible open and singing to God in the house. They were worship pastors, but it was much more normal for us to hear them worshiping in the house than it was on a platform. Mm. And so I saw them pursue Jesus my whole childhood. And so, you know, I told my wife the other day, I was like, I don't know that, you know, you can't force the gospel onto anyone, even your own children. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I want my girls to know as they get older is that their dad really loved them, still loves them, and that their mom and their dad loved each other, and they really did believe that they loved Christ. And I think, honestly, that's all I can ask for, you know?
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, and then trust God with the rest. So
absolutely.
That's been kind of where I've been at for me. It's been trying to develop healthy practices of just being with Jesus.
Outside and intentionality.
Of, yeah.
I think that's phenomenal. Yeah. With the intentionality point, I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't say you've got incredible hair, and get ready for it to be braided and ponytails and bows put into it.
Is that a shot at me? Holly,
No.
You know what's hilarious is, so my oldest daughter loves my hair, and she plays with it all the time. and was I almost cut it this last week. I almost got it took off quite a bit as I had this plan to do this really short cut with like mm-hmm. this mullet. It's like this modern mullet thing I was going to do. And then I chickened out right before it. And yeah. I was like, I can't do it. And then Journey looked at me and she was like, she said, Dad, she was like my oldest. She's like so emotional. She was like, I love it. It's my favorite. She was like, she's theatrical. She's like, Dad, I'm so happy that you didn't cut your hair. My aww. Favorite thing in the world is brushing your hair. Please don't ever cut your hair. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
So, I love that.
Confirmation.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
Confirmation. All right. Well, we are so glad that we finally were able to make this happen.
You know what? I'm done with this, Johnny. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. It's too hot.
At least let me wrap it up. Let me wrap it up before you just yell at me.
I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm out of here, dude.
You can check out the latest version with Carrie Jobe.
It feels so awkward saying that.
City of God is out now at Leland Official on the Insta. Two of the greatest guys. It took 14 years to get here. So it means that we will see you guys in 2028.
2038.
Is it?
Thank you guys for having us.
Oh, 2038. I can't even do math. Yeah.
2038. We'll all be robots by then or in heaven. So
exactly. One of the two.
I love you guys. Thank y'all for having us.
It took 14 years.
Yeah.
And I think it was well worth the wait.
I think so. That was so much fun. It's always great just to have a good hang with people and just to hear their hearts and where they're at. I love what Leland had to say about music artists and how worship is like a tool, like a weapon, and an artist kind of creates things. And so I just loved seeing worship artists in that perspective.
And it also goes to show you, I mean, when we talk about those why me moments, there's the hills, there's the valleys, and then there's the right nows.
Yeah.
And him being in the midst of it. And we're all going, we always say it's a third, a third, a third. A third are coming into something, in the middle of something, and coming out of something. But we're always into something.
Yeah. And for Casey to be just almost no one had hope, this little preemie. And now look at him impacting people through messages that God is giving him and Leland through their music.
Yeah. No, it's good. So good. Thank you to everybody who has downloaded, who subscribes, who finds us on the YouTube, who finds us on the Facebook, who finds us on the Twitter or the Instagram or whatever else. We're just so thankful that you've taken some time to hang with us.
Yes. So thank you for being a part of today. We will do this all over again next week. And don't forget, you can always check out more at faithstrongtoday.com. Yeah.